You know what? Okay, I'll tell you this. From the time I started until today, I've never been good at timing. So when it comes to getting off on timing, that's me. I do it, so I apologize. All right, let's turn our Bibles to James. Looking at this beautiful, beautiful book, and really, maybe one of the, not my favorite, I have to say, James 4, 8, 9, and 10 probably are the verses that God has used the most in my life. But in terms of, I think, part of what's the heartbeat of what's pulsating through this book, all the veins tend to run right back into this little passage right here. The summarization of what true wisdom is. And we saw that a wisdom that's from above, it's a divine gift from God that he wants us to ask for. And the certain qualities are, first of all, a quality that allows us to relate to God. There needs to be a purity in our lives that is first. But after that, when there's purity, then it's followed by peaceableness. And that becomes the first, and it becomes the last of the things. I'm going to emphasize that here even this evening. It means that we're going to be gentle. We're going to be easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. We're going to finish here and try to put a bow on this passage with verse 18. It says, "And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace." How many of you say that's a little bit of a mouthful right there? That's a little bit to kind of get my mind wrapped around. I have to say, I'm very familiar with this book because I memorized it. And so all of these phrases have gone through my head over and over and over and over again. And I look at this and I'm thinking, I told my family tonight, I said, I don't think I've ever quite understood it until now. I think I had some general idea of it, but I didn't quite have the same idea. So I'm excited to share that. And I kind of recognize there's some, it's a challenge. Anytime you see the word "of" in the Bible, that word "of" means that there's a relationship between the two words. But what that relationship is, it basically says you got to figure it out by the context. And most of the time in context, we can pretty clearly see what that is. But there's up to 23 different possibilities in terms of each one of these words. And some have narrowed these down when it says the fruit of righteousness. Does that mean fruit that produces righteousness? Is the fruit is righteousness? Is the fruit from righteousness? You know, and just you can start looking at these things. And I think it's helpful for us to identify the phrase, the fruit of righteousness, in one particular, as one unit. So that, in some sense, let's look at the word righteous. Let's break it down. That's a big word. But let's say it this way: a life that pleases God. I'm like, okay, I get that. Like, this is what pleases my Savior. And he says, here it is, the fruit that is righteousness. So in the aspect of fruit, that kind of is the end product of every plant. They put out the flowers and they put out the fruit. You think about, you know, what comes up first in the tomato plant? You got some stem, and then you get some leaves, and you get some stalks, and then you get the flowers. But what you're really waiting for is what comes out last, and that's the tomatoes. they form up. And so this idea of fruit is something that you might look at in terms of the harvest. That's what you're going to gather. What you want, and what each and every one of us as believers, and I can just see across the room, every single one of your eyes are telling me, you want a life that pleases God. You want to stand before your Savior, and you want the fruit of righteousness in your life. You want a harvest that is pleasing to Him. How do you get it? He says, well, the fruit, if you want a tomato plant, and you want that tomatoes, what you need is a tomato seed. And you plant that in the ground. And it's going to produce the plant that's going to produce the fruit that you want. So do you see the concept of it here? The fruit of righteousness is sown. So now we're going back. What in terms of the life of a tomato plant, where fruit is the last thing, where is the sowing at? That's at the very beginning, all right? So we're kind of coming from the front all the way back to the beginning, and he says, it is sown in peace. Of them, now who's the one who's doing the sowing? Of those that make peace. I think the best way for me to understand this is if you were to say, I want a tomato plant, I would say, wonderful. Go outside tomorrow, put a little crack in the soil, and put your tomato seeds in the ground and cover them up and watch for that plant just to come up. And you'll have some tomatoes by February, I'm sure, maybe early March, something like that, right? You guys look at me saying, wait a second, there's a problem here. Tomato plants don't grow up in this kind of weather. Now, if you went and you had a greenhouse, you could sow some tomato plants and you could grow them and you could enjoy that. And what God's saying is, if you want a life that produces the fruit of righteousness, you have to plant them in just a certain kind of way. You have to put them in the greenhouse because they don't just grow out any old way. And what is the greenhouse? The greenhouse is the climate control. It's making sure that the temperature's right, just right. What is the greenhouse in this passage? Well, if you could, yeah, okay, you're tracking with me already. I don't have to coax it out of you. It's sown in peace. If you try to sow your actions outside of peace, you will not produce the righteousness of God. If we want to, I think, and I honestly don't know 100% sure if I'm saying this right, but I do believe, I didn't confirm it, if you go back to chapter 1, verse 20, this is the only other occurrence of the word righteousness in the entire book. So let's look at that and see if there might be a connection, because, you know, pastor's kind of big on connections. Maybe it's all in my head, but I think this is in the Bible. I think the Bible's putting them together. I hope you see it. You believe it. Verse 20 says, for the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. See how the wrath of man and sowing in peace are opposites? One here is on the negative side, says if you live with this type of anger, type of frustration in life, you're not going to work the righteousness of God. So this is immensely helpful to us. I don't think this is just one way to please God. I believe this is the only way to please God. When Jesus was here on the earth, he said, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. You're going to be like you're going to be like your father if you have this atmosphere around you and you are so careful to be creating peace. So what that means is when I'm interacting with people, I'm sowing seeds. I'm sowing seeds all the time with my actions. And am I sowing them in peace? As I begin to think about this, I do believe that preachers are prone to overstating things. I may overstate a few things here, but I think I'm saying something that's true. But if you want to have a righteous life, you can't have the last word in every argument. Because that's not peaceful, is it? It doesn't produce peace. And when you sow that seed, that's not going to yield you a crop, of a harvest, a fruit of righteousness. Think of it in terms of if I'm a person that is constantly churning over resentment, and I'm allowing those things that other people have done against me to constantly be coming up in my mind, and I'm just dissatisfied all the time. If I'm a person who's constantly finding fault with other people, and I'm just rubbing people the wrong way. Or I'm a person of strife that I'm always going forward to get my own way, and I'm going to make sure I get mine. And that's what, you know, this is the contrast of all these other aspects where envying and strife is, where there's jealousies among people, or where there's just self-will pushing oneself forward. He said, that's not the wisdom that descended from above. That's not God leading our lives. You know, this is so important for us because he's going to go into the very next chapter and say, from whence cometh wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence even of your lust which war in your members? There's a certain kind of reality, and we're dealing with this in RU, so I'm working on appreciation and I'm working on ingratitude. And appreciation is a heart that sees God at work in all the people around me. And in fact, it sees God at work in all the people around me so that I can give thanks to God in all things. And he says, I'm thankful to God. It's the attitude of gratitude for what God is doing against me and all these two people, right? Is that the definition? Anybody know it? No, it says what God is doing for me. If you've got a heart of appreciation and gratitude, it means that you believe that the people in your life, God is using all those people for me. There's benefit. Even the person who's needling you. Even the person who sinned against you. Even the person who sold you into slavery. You meant it for evil. God meant it for good. God intends good. So I can be appreciation. There's an attitude of, what's appreciation feel like? I was thinking through that. I had to write out my thing today. And thinking appreciation is a feeling of unworthiness. Because you're not going to appreciate anything anyone else does until you realize, I don't deserve that. And when someone does something for you, you're like, thank you. But it's not just the feeling of, no one likes to feel unworthy. I feel unworthy. You know, that's the more of a groveling. So you're going to feel humble. There's a distaste. But there's also the feeling of blessedness. I don't deserve the good and the blessing that I'm giving. And so you're filled with gratitude. And you know what that produces in you? You know, of appreciation. If I am filled with appreciation and gratitude, you know, I'm going around losing. No, I've got an energy in my life. Doesn't mean doesn't mean you have to be a wallflower or anything, but there's a certain kind of godly energy that's just so thankful for what God's doing. You know what the opposite of it is in our definition, which I think is really good? Ingratitude is indifference. Indifference speaks to me really a lack of energy at all. Because you know what happens in my life when I focus on my flesh and I'm self-focused and I'm filled with pride, and I think I deserve it, and someone else doesn't, I don't feel happy. I don't feel an energy. I actually feel indifferent to everything that's going on. I can't even recognize the good and the blessing that I'm receiving. And in fact, all of a sudden, I'm more irritable. I'm easily offended because my pride is getting bigger and bigger, and it's so much easier to do me wrong because I deserve so much. And I am not sowing my seeds in peace. And I'm not producing a crop that will be pleasing to God. So God's given it to us here. We ought to say, you know what, God, please help me. The Spirit is called the Spirit of Peace. He will enable us, as we submit to Him, say, Lord, give me that wisdom from above. How can I get in around this cactusy person? Without getting poked and getting irritated. Lord, give me wisdom to interact with someone that really is belligerent to me. They're harsh, but I can be gentle. I don't have to be someone who's hardened in my opinion, but I can be easily entreated. I can be peaceable in my life. So may God help us to see that this is something, this is a fruit that God's looking for. It's like you come to the tomato plant and you're looking for some tomatoes. God's looking around at the Christians and he's looking for the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy. May we taste that beautiful fruit among us, even this evening. All right, let me see here. I probably don't call over.